The Defense Department says it continues to be concerned about counterfeit parts making their way into weapon systems and virtually everything else it buys. The worries are that fake parts could cause mission-critical systems to fail unexpectedly. Of course, there are concerns, too, about undetected cybersecurity vulnerabilities making their way into defense systems. All that means more contract requirements for vendors who do business with DoD. A new rule taking effect earlier this month will be incorporated into all new contracts from now on, setting up three different categories of electronic parts suppliers. Joe Petrillo is a procurement attorney with the Washington law firm Petrillo & Powell. He joins us often to talk about federal contracting law, and he's back with us again this week. Hi there, Joe.
Good morning.
So this is just the latest in a series of new or new-ish requirements DOD and Congress have been putting into place on counterfeit parts, and then we have a new proposed rule, too, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Anyway, how does the final rule fit into what's already been happening over the past couple of years?
Well, there's another clause that has been in existence for a while that is a general clause dealing with this topic in a broad sense, but that clause only applied to prime contractors who were CAS covered by the cost accounting standards, and that tended to be the larger defense contractors. The hook there, though, was that they were required to flow the clause down to all of their subcontractors at every level, and so the clause got fairly broad distribution. This new clause, however, is not so limited. It's not limited only to CAS-covered contractors. It's supposed to apply to all contracts that have electronic parts or components, and it includes contractors who are at every size and contracts at every size, and includes commercial items and includes commercial off-the-shelf items. It's very broad.
And the size even down below the simplified acquisition threshold, which is what, I think,
exactly.
$150,000?
Right. Even below there. This is trying to impose, I think, as broad a ban on counterfeit parts as can be imagined.
And so I referenced the category system in the lead-in here. How is that all going to work? What are these three categories supposed to be? And I understand there's a preference for category one. Maybe we should start there.
Exactly. So the way that the clause works, or at least half of the clause works, is that the parts have to be obtained from a certain type of source, and the sources are lumped into three categories. Category one requires that if the part is in production by the original manufacturer or an authorized aftermarket manufacturer, then it has to be obtained from that manufacturer or from a supplier that gets the parts exclusively from the manufacturer or an authorized supplier. So in Category 1, if the part's in production, you've got to get it from the actual manufacturer or a source that only gets it from the manufacturer, an authorized supplier. That takes care of a bunch of things, but then there are parts that are out of production or not available. And then you go to Category 2 and Category 3 in order. Category 2 applies if a part is not available from Category 1 sources, and you need to get it from a contractor-approved source. Available appears to apply only to schedule, not cost, according to the explanatory materials. So you've got to have a contractor-approved source.
Let's stay on Category 2 for a second, because the final language there is a bit of a change from the proposed version from, I think, last year, which said that contractors had to use trusted sources, and the final one says trustworthy sources, and that's completely up to the judgment of the contractor, which seems like dangerous territory, because the contracting officer can then audit your sources, and you wind up with a difference of opinion on whether that source is trustworthy.
Absolutely, and those differences, as we'll see, can expand. For these Category 2 sources, the contractor must approve the source using established industry standards and processes. There are some of these listed on the DLA website from ordinary industry groups that you might expect, like ISO, but those are not exclusive. Now, the contractor, however, as you point out, doesn't have a completely free hand here, because the contracting officer can review and audit these processes. And what the contracting officer's scope of action here is going to expand, because under the proposed rule, and the same day, August 2nd, a proposed rule was issued, The contracting officer will be able to review, audit, and approve not just the processes, but the suppliers themselves.
And that's the key change, right, in the proposed rule, that the contracting officer can approve, not just audit after the fact.
Exactly. The approval of the actual source and is an important power the contracting officer is going to have, and the proposal is silent about who bears any additional costs that come from a contracting officer not approving a source.
So what are the government's remedies, I guess, if they do audit your sources and determine that either this supplier under Category 2 is not trustworthy or that your part is indeed counterfeit?
Well, they're going to, you know, this is a clause that deals with vetting the sources of parts. Other clauses require the contractor to supply only non-counterfeit parts, only genuine parts, and take action if those leak into the supply chain. In terms of audit of approving sources, this particular scheme sets up the approved sources for acquisition of a source in any given context, and the contractor is going to have to abide by the contracting officer's direction. There may have a claim for additional costs, but the contracting officer, I think, is going to have the ability to make determinations under this clause as under other clauses. And we still have to talk about Category 3, which is the last category here. And if a part's not available from Category 1 or 2, or if a subcontractor, other than the original manufacturer, refuses to accept the flowdown of this clause into the subcontract, or if the contractor can't confirm that the part is new and unused and hasn't been commingled with other parts that aren't new and unused, then the contractor has a separate set of obligations. It's to do two things: notify the contracting officer, and then implement and document an inspection, test, and authentication process. So that obviously can be very time-consuming, very costly. And if you're in Category 3, that's the requirement.
And hopefully that doesn't come up too often. And as I understand it, though, Joe, a lot of contractors can source their parts from for a contract from government sources like the GSA schedule. Theoretically, those supply chains have already been kind of vetted. So is that an out for a contractor?
Actually, it is not. The clause specifically looks into that issue, and unless the part actually comes from government inventory or stock, using a vetted government source like the Federal Supply Schedule or suppliers accredited by the Defense Microelectronics Agency doesn't relieve the contractor of the obligations of the clause. Still have to follow all these things. And one of those additional obligations that we haven't gotten into yet is traceability, which is an interesting requirement as well. The contractor must be able to track the parts from the original manufacturer to acceptance by government. And if the contractor can't do that, if the contractor then has to inspect, test, and authenticate the part in accordance with industry standards and provide documentation either of traceability or those testing and authentication processes. So we've got a kind of belt and suspenders system set up in the regulations. Inspection and testing is going to be required if there's a Category 3 supplier or when the part does not have traceability. In either of those two instances, you've got the expensive and time-consuming process of inspection, testing, and approval.
Back to the issue of government sources, though, if a part from a government supply chain turns out to have been counterfeit or doesn't meet the traceability requirements, is the contractor on the hook for the costs of replacing that part?
Well, that's an interesting question that the clause doesn't answer. Under standard government furnished property provisions, government is obligated to provide items that are suitable for their intended use. But that isn't necessarily the case if the contractor is accessing the parts directly from the contractor using something like the Federal Supply Schedule, which it has to get government approval to use. There is an interesting dichotomy here. On the one hand, the government's saying, well, you have to deal with trusted suppliers who have been properly vetted, and you have to put in place a system to do that. On the other hand, it's saying you can't trust the suppliers we've vetted, which is a kind of an odd dichotomy.
Yes, it is. All right, Joe Petrillo with Petrillo and Powell. Thanks as always, Joe.
Thank you very much, Jared.
And you can share this interview with colleagues at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Just click share with friends.